Hello, Alex Zane here. Thank you for choosing to listen to Just the Facts. And while you can still enjoy these episodes forever, you might want to check out our brand new show, A Trip to the Movies, where each week a different famous film fan curates their perfect night out at the cinema, picking what snacks they'd eat, where they'd sit, who they'd go with, and of course, what movies they'd screen. If you love cinema as much as we do, search A Trip to the Movies with Alex Zane or head to our socials at Trip to Movies Pod. That's at Trip to Movies Pod to find out more.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Just the Facts with me, Alex Zane, the podcast that takes a journey through the cinematic CV of a different guest every week to uncover some fascinating facts about their career. And thank you for being here for our magnificent 15th episode. If you haven't done so already, please right now take a moment to hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and you will get a brand new episode straight to your device, into your ears, every single week. And for all the latest news and updates about our upcoming guests, do follow us on Instagram and Twitter at JTFpod. That's at JTFpod. And also, if you do prefer to watch your interviews rather than listen to them, then the video interview comes out the Friday after the podcast, which is on a Tuesday. So the Tuesday is the podcast, the Friday is the video interview, and you can watch it on our YouTube channel, Just the Facts with Alex Zane. Subscribe now on YouTube. Yep, all good? All good. Right then, my guest this week is a devilishly talented actor who has seen his TV show Lucifer become nothing short of a phenomenon. A phenomenon that is drawing the curtain on its final season, which begins this Friday on Netflix, September the 10th. It's the final season of Lucifer. It was an absolute pleasure having him on the show. Please welcome to Just the Facts, the incredible Tom Ellis. Lovely business. How are you? How are you, Tom?
I'm very well, thanks, Alex. I'm sitting here in New York looking at a very sunny Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. It was a massive thunderstorm yesterday, and it feels like it got rid of all the humidity that's been existing here for the last 2 months because it's been boiling. But I'm good, mate. I'm good. I'm happy.
What are you doing in New York?
Sounds very fancy. I'm shooting a movie.
Oh,
I know. I'm doing a new romantic comedy film for Netflix that's going to come out next year. Uh-huh. And I'm working with Gina Rodriguez, who is the star of Jane the Virgin. And we're having a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, New York's a great city. It doesn't do weather by halves, though, does it? So it's either bitterly cold or ridiculously hot or unbearably humid.
Yeah. There's like two windows in the year that people talk about and romanticize about. They go, oh, I love New York in the spring. And it's like, that lasts for about 2 weeks. And in the fall, that lasts for about 2 weeks as well. And then it's just like, then it's extreme. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember once going to a comedy club there. I mean, it was bitterly cold. So it's winter. And I don't mind. I don't mind the cold. The heat, I'm not good in. I can't stand the heat. Yeah. I've got, you know, Monica from Friends hair. So heat and humidity, pff, ridiculous. Yeah. But I went in winter, went into the Comedy Cellar, and it was cold. Came out about an hour later, 6 feet of snow. It was ridiculous.
Crazy.
That's an exaggeration. Crazy.
It's very magical.
It is.
It's very magical, isn't it?
Have you been a lot?
I've been over the last sort of like, I guess 10 years, I've been to New York, but it's always been for like a week to do press or this or that. I've never spent a concentrated amount of time here, but I will have been here for like 2.5 months by the time we finish.
Oh, wow.
And it's been great, man. Really, really cool.
Do you remember the first time you went? I only ask because I remember distinctly the first time I went to New York, and it felt, and I've never had this in LA or any other city. It felt like I was walking onto one big movie set because of, weirdly enough, all the romantic comedies we've all seen set in New York.
Just like, it's just iconic images everywhere, and like things that you don't think about that are iconic images, like steam coming out from from like manhole covers, and that actually happens in real life.
Yeah.
Just the hustle and bustle of New York that you see on the big screen, that's how it is. That's the weirdest thing about it. And it's kind of timeless as a city in America as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I was that guy. I remember the first time I saw steam coming out of a manhole, I was like, photo, I need a photo of that. I've never seen it in real life.
I know. I keep having those moments.
So is that, where's home for you then? Are you still UK based? I think of you as living in LA, weirdly enough, probably because of Lucifer.
I mean, LA is pretty much home base for sure. My kids still go to school in the UK. And so I'm back in the UK a lot to see them, and they're over with me. So I do a lot of transatlanticing kind of traveling. LA is very much home base at the moment, for sure.
That, I mean, it sounds, I guess some people go, oh, that sounds like a lot, traveling back and forth across the Atlantic. I love that flight. I actually really, do you like flying? Because for me, I've worked out why. It's because it is one of the few times that you can just sit, eat, drink, watch a movie, and not feel guilty.
Absolutely. 100% completely with you on that one. No, I really look forward to that. I hate airports. But once I get on the airplane, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is nice.
Yeah.
Just take my shoes off. And it's great. I do. I love it. And it's weird how you get used to a flight as well. Like, it feels like an extraordinarily, extraordinarily long flight. And then the more you do it, it's like, mentally, it's never the same.
Yeah. So, I prefer the LA flight to the New York flight, because the New York flight's not long enough. But LA, you can watch a couple of movies, a couple of glasses of wine, and still get about 6 hours sleep.
Exactly. You can get drunk and wake up and have a hangover by the time you've got there. It's great.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. So, hey, I mean, it's big. It's big. Lucifer is coming to an end after, what, seven years?
It'll be about 7 years. So six, 7 years. Gosh, yeah. This will be season six, but season five was split into two. So technically this is season seven.
just in case people weren't confused enough. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's been a big part of your life. I guess the big question, are you going to miss it?
Oh, for sure. But I kind of feel like I was ready to finish as well. So it's weird, because I was talking about this earlier, that I 3 years ago the show was cancelled after season three. And at that point I was absolutely devastated and gutted, because I felt like we hadn't really finished our story. It was like we're doing a play, and then it was the interval, and then the play got closed down, and it was like, well, people were watching that, and it was a very sort of unsatisfying feeling about that. But now we've been able to tell the beginning, middle, and end of our story. I feel really happy and satisfied. And so I will undoubtedly miss it, but also, you know, the people that I love from the show and my friends that I've made on the show and whatever, they're like lifers now. You know, it's been a huge chunk of my life. So I don't worry that I'm not going to see people again. And I will be a little bit sad to say goodbye to the character, but it was time.
I mean, it's you've undoubtedly heard this a lot over the last 7 years, but what a cool character to play. I mean, when you first read for it, I'm assuming you went to an audition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I did.
I was, you know, it's not unheard of that people just go, "You're the guy. We don't need to see anything." But you auditioned for it then. Do you remember that audition?
I do vividly. It was weird because I'd done a show in the States that has been like sort of my breaking the ice, and people have really sort of gotten to know who I was, certainly, you know, that were making stuff, not necessarily audiences. And then, so I knew that I had a good chance of the things that I was going in for, but I remember getting a script for Lucifer, and it was by about the third page, I was just like, I just love this character. I love the way it's written. It makes me laugh out loud. It's so different to all the other stuff I'm reading. You know, and I felt there was an opportunity there to do something with it that was very different and unique. And so I kind of like, I took some big swings in my choices because like he wasn't written as British. He wasn't written as any of these like things I've sort of added over the years. But I just was like, I think this is the opportunity to kind of make a mark. So I took some really big swings and maybe some big choices. And I just kind of fingers crossed, and I went in to meet Len Wiseman, who was directing the pilot. And it's so funny, like you can, when you're in those situations, there was people in before me, and I remember like everyone was about, took about maybe 3 to 5 minutes of in and out. And I remember I'd been in there for maybe about 10 minutes and we were still going and Len was giving me notes and stuff. And I thought, well, maybe I've got a bit of purchase here. Maybe we might be onto something. And like literally about 24 hours later, Len had basically said, "I want you to do it. We have to convince the studio and all that." But once I knew I had him on side, I felt like that maybe the job was going to be mine, and it just played out that way. But it was, I didn't really realise how big a job it was until we started shooting the pilot, basically.
So you went for British. What were the other big swings that you took?
I think like the heightened nature of his sensibilities, like I really can't. It really, when I read it for the first time, there was a cadence to his voice, and a sort of and it for me, it only worked that it was sort of delivered in a sort of rapid fire way. He didn't think and muse about these things that he said. He just said them, and he said a lot in a short space of time. So it was all about pace and being on top of the lines. And it reminded me a lot of being in a sort of Oscar Wilde play or a Noel Coward play, where these kind of, these witticisms that these characters have, they just kind of come out in droves, in endless kind of like sentences. And so that was something that I was going for, which doesn't really tie in with like a modern US TV show and how people, like stylistically, how people go for things. So certainly that. And then I think just sort of not going down the typical alpha male route. I wanted there to be a little bit of ambiguity about who he was. And a lot of people commented that Lucifer was quite camp when I first started out. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, that's again, it kind of like, it ticked those boxes, or not ticked, it kind of resonated in my head about certain characters like Algy and Oscar, you know, importance of being earnest and things like that. There is a kind of like ambiguity about the sexuality of these characters. And that was something we tied in with Lucifer just being an open sexual creature, basically, and all of those things. But all of these almost like theatrical choices that I made in my head, and I'm just committed to it. And thankfully, they went for the sort of big character in a grounded world version that I was kind of looking for.
So, and it was just you and Len Wiseman in that audition, because I've heard that quite often compared to British auditions, American network shows, they literally have everyone from the network in the room. Like, you've got the lawyers in there.
Yeah. My first experience of doing a screen test in America was exactly that. It was like, I may as well have been doing like a small theater job. There was it was in a room on Fox Studios, and I'd done my first audition in front of about 4 people, and then they called me back, and it was like what they call the studio test. And everyone who represents the studio. And there was, like you say, it's about 40 people in this room of like all these chairs out. And yeah, it was really kind of very, very different experience than what I'd ever had before. But thankfully, over the years, they've tweaked that a little bit. And it's more that you have your creatives in the room, your director, definitely, and maybe a couple of other people. And then they record it and then they show it afterwards. And if the creative is on your side, then you'll get time to work it as well. It's not just like do it once and that's it. It's like, let's work this. Let's make sure we've got the best version of it before we present it to the people we want to present it to. Right. So, yeah, it was a lot less stressful, that version of doing it.
And at no point did they go, whoa, where's that? Not that accent. What on earth are you doing?
Thankfully not. It was really weird because I remember it was US pilot season. Like all the jobs I've been going for were American characters at that moment in time.
And you can do an American accent, as has been proved. Yeah,
I've just been in a show playing this American doctor, and so I was ready for that. And I remember like attacking the material with an American accent, and I just after like 5 minutes just was like, this guy just sounds like a dick. There's something about it doing it in American accent that just doesn't work. And there's something hugely charming and forgivable for Americans to hear Brits. They just find it so kind of like, you could be saying anything you like, but because you say it in a British accent, they're kind of immediately charmed by it. And so I kind of thought, if we're going to play this deplorable character, we've got to make him likable somehow. And that was the way in.
And did you feel like you'd nailed it? Like when you walked out? Because you just know that you've hit everything. And I mean, obviously Len calling you 24 hours later was a clue, but before then, were you like in that 24 hours, were you like, I think I got that?
I knew it had gone well because there was a casting director who had called like after that session had finished, called my management team to say that went really well. Len's very keen. We've got some more people to see, blah, blah, blah. So I sort of knew definitely that it had gone pretty well, but also I had, like I said to you, like I knew that I'd been in there for longer than 5 minutes. So I thought, there's, you're saying there's a chance. It was kind of that sort of feeling. But I knew going into it, it sort of hit, was in my sweet spot as well. Mm. And that gave me a lot of confidence going in.
So what's it like? I mean, it fascinates me because it's such a big thing. TV in America, network TV, a network show like this. And obviously you're a familiar face on British TV. You've been in Miranda, which is a huge series for the BBC, but actually being cast as the lead in a show like Lucifer, what changes around you? Like, does it feel like a palpable difference in your life that this suddenly this network is there going, you're our guy?
Yeah. I mean, yes, but it's strange how when you're right in the middle of it and you're doing it, like I didn't think about it. And I mean, things that were definitely different in those circumstances in terms of filming, I was like, wow. But on the pilot, we shot on Hollywood Boulevard for 5 nights in a row, and we had it closed off between Highland and La Brea, which is essentially where the Oscars are, where the red carpet for the Oscars.
Yeah.
We had that entire section closed for our filming, and I was like, wow. And it was like huge crews and all these techno cranes, and I was like, wow, this is like pinch me moment.
wait, where did they put all the crazies? Because Hollywood Boulevard is
we still had the crazies. Like I got a load of shit off one of the Spider-Men, because there's about four of them, and they all one of them, like some of them are really great, and there's one that basically essentially just wears the Spider-Man pajamas from Argos, and he's never washed them, and just covered in like salty stains of like sweat and stuff.
I've seen him.
That Spider-Man is really angry, and he was really angry that we were on his patch for 5 nights in a row.
Do you understand Spider-Man? You are meant to be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. That is your one thing.
And a really gruff voice. It didn't sound like Peter Parker. That was, I knew that felt like I was in a bigger thing, like from a technical and from a work point of view. In terms of like how it's become, as a show and like how it's changed my life in that way, it's only really now, to be honest, Alex. And like, I would say the huge difference was when we went to Netflix. And since the show went to Netflix, that is such an enormous platform, like globally. And it was also the first time that the show was going out to all the different territories at the same time and dropping at the same time. that's when things really, I was like, oh, this is different. And now I find myself in New York and I can't really walk down the street without people like stopping me going, oh, yeah, I love the show. And it's, and I get that everywhere I go now. And that's lovely and really affirming, but also like, that's the difference. It's really changed my life in that sense.
That's kind of crazy, isn't it? Because like normally it's sort of, you know, the first few seasons would be sort of the big sort of launch pad for a show. Exactly. And the thing that people go, have you seen this? Have you seen this? But I guess, you know, it must be quite strange sort of being it was the fourth season that went to Netflix, wasn't it? So the fourth season in, and then only then does it sort of catch fire, which it really has. It feels like more people than ever know the show and talk about it.
I think, yeah, and I think there's a few reasons. I mean, Netflix being one of them, I think lockdown being another one of them is that, like, everybody in lockdown, you know, people just binge their way through everything they hadn't watched. And so we already had a really big fan base before that, and now it just feels like going into the final season, it's just, you know, it's gotten, I wouldn't say out of control, but, like, it's bigger than ever, and it's just, it's amazing to be part of it on this side of it, because I remember when we started out and it felt like, there's so much TV being made these days that you just want people to kind of like give you a chance and watch it. And to have sort of broken through that and come to a place where like it's a household show and people know the show. And, you know, more often than not, I'll meet people and one person in their household will watch Lucifer. And that just feels like a massive achievement these days, because it's not the same as it used to be when there's only four channels when I was growing up.
Yeah, I mean, back then you had to stand up to change the channel as well. You were sort of crossing the room, thunk, thunk.
Exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned the fans. Another actor who we had on the podcast has had a similar experience and still has a similar experience with their show, which has just a really rabid fan base. And I mean that in a good way, like Lucifer does, which was Sam Heughan.
He's a friend of mine.
Is he really?
We went to drama school together, me and Sam. He was a couple of years below me.
I like to do all my research, and I'm now embarrassed that I did not know that. So you were at drama school with Sam?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
We had a really, it was interesting actually, I look back at it now, and we had a really fruitful kind of couple of years in terms of talent, because James McAvoy was in my class as well at drama school. And then we had Sam, we had Michael Stephen Cree, and there's a few other people as well have done really well out of that kind of grouping. So yeah, no, it's Sam indeed does have a very rabid, outlandish, outlander fan base. He's a great guy though, so he deserves it.
Oh, were you actually friends in drama school?
He was. People laugh about this, but we used to call him Handsome Sam. Like, that was his nickname. Anyone whose nickname is much longer than their actual name is like, you've got to really think about that. But he's Handsome Sam. He's always been incredibly good looking and just an incredibly lovely chap.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he is lovely and very, very, very handsome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although you're very handsome as well. It must have been quite a year. That's kind of weird that he gets the handsome. Were you not a little bit annoyed? You're like, what do I get? What's my nickname? Did you have
I was waiting for my glow up, basically, Alex. at that moment in time. I was very into the Guinness in those days.
Yeah. Oh, love a Guinness, but yeah, you can feel it. It sits.
It sits everywhere, really.
Mm. Yeah, if you ever want to bulk up for a roll, Guinness. Guinness and pork scratchings in the corner of an old boozer.
Ooh, lovely.
Isn't that a
dream? Takes me back. Yes.
So like you, I mean, you mentioned this already, and I didn't realize that at the end of season three. Obviously, when Fox and it boggles the mind when you think about ratings, because Fox were like, oh, it's not rating well enough for us to keep it. And then you look at the ratings, you're like, it was doing close to 5 million, like in the UK. That would be like, that's good enough. We're keeping this. Yeah. But I guess in America,
it was a really interesting sort of social, I don't want to say social experiment, but it was a really interesting insight into how TV is changing. Because the network TV system was, they would talk about the ratings being demographics, and they were only concerned about one demographic, and that demographic was people between the age of 18 and 49, because they're the people that spend money on the commercials that fund this. And that's how commercial TV works. So it was all about, who are these people watching this show? And the computer said no to Fox. but the weird thing was that works to a certain degree, but what Fox hadn't counted for was now these days, of course, Lucifer was then being sold off to different streaming services around the world. So it was being shown at kind of at the same time, like a day later, to audiences across the globe. So even though Fox were getting their numbers in about how it lives in the Fox domain, what they weren't counting on was how popular it was becoming elsewhere. And that's when this kind of weird thing was like, well, this show that is on what they call on the bubble over here, which means it's like it's got almost enough viewers to be safe, but not quite. Suddenly.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
They were like, oh, we're going to cancel that show. They didn't realize that there were like gazillions of people watching it who were going to say, hold on a minute, I was watching that. But, you know, it was, I was fortunate to be on the right end of that kind of equation, basically. But it was an interesting insight because we felt for a long time like maybe we weren't that popular, you know, and we were always sort of fighting for our lives, basically.
That sounds like an awful condition to work in, right? Constantly, well, it is. Right? I mean, with the axe hanging over you.
But that is how American TV, network TV works. Like, you're literally waiting for your viewing figures to come in to go, are we safe? Are we safe? Are we going to do another season? You know, are we going to do any more of this? And it isn't a nice environment to work in because you feel like you're just being judged and you're waiting for these sort of ice skating scores to come in that mean nothing to anybody. Mm. I'm glad, you know, going to Netflix was also incredibly liberating in that sense because we didn't feel like we had this sort of ominous axe over our heads. And we also felt like, oh, these people really like us and like they really like what we're doing. And they've told us that, you know, and this is so it felt very affirming from a creative point of view.
And it must have been nice. I mean, obviously not the best circumstances to be made aware of your fan base, but it was a huge deal. Save Lucifer trending on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And just to see that mobilization of the fans must have been quite nice.
Mate, that was my turning point for me because I'd found out the show had been cancelled about 24 hours before it was announced. And I was at a fan convention in Rome, having a great time. And I suddenly got this news. And from being in a room where everyone was celebrating Lucifer and talking about it and stuff, it was like, that was it. It was over. And I was devastated. I mean, to be honestly, I was really, really gutted because I'd been having a great time doing it and just felt like, you know, we would keep going because it felt like it had started to gain that popularity. So I felt devastated. And then as soon as it was announced to the public, I like my phone just blew up and it started to make, initially I was just like, oh, well, this is lovely. Oh, people are reaching out saying how much they love the show. And this is amazing. And then this hashtag Save Lucifer started. And then like, it just didn't stop. It just kept going and going and going and going to the point where I went to bed that night, got up the next day. And it was like, wow, this is, people are really angry about this. and then I got a call from Warner Brothers saying that they were going to try and find a new home for it. But not to like hold my breath. These things are very unlikely, but just so you know, we're trying because we've taken notice of the fan response. And that's when I packed my bags and sort of headed out to LA to try and help with that process. Mm. And as I got to Heathrow Airport, I got a direct message on Twitter from BBC Newsnight saying, we're following this thing about Save Lucifer. Do you want to come on the show and talk about it? And I'm like, on BBC Newsnight? This is bonkers. This is like grown-up news. What are you talking about? Okay. So I said, I'm on my way to LA. I like, we'll do it. So we did it down the line from LA and it just didn't stop that whole week after that. And then like going into the following week. And then I found out that Netflix had sort of swooped in and they were sort of doing all the contractual stuff for a while. And I had to be tight lipped about it. But yeah, it was amazing. It was really the most vindicating moment I've had in my career.
It's just to hear you talk about it like that. It must have been a really, you know, not to over-exaggerate, but quite an emotional experience to see.
It was.
That appreciation for something you're
involved
in.
It really was. And it set the tone for really how the last few years has been with our fan base. We do, as you say, you know, like Outlander, we do have some rather rabid fans in the best possible way. I like to use the word passionate, tenacious, but we have some
incredible fans.
Yeah.
That's better than rabid. Rabid is a little bit foaming at the
they're
mouth.
Not,
like,
they're not
where
foaming
are you, Tom?
At the mouth, exactly.
But whereabouts in New York are you? Show me where you are. What street you on? What's your hotel number?
Exactly. But they have been amazing, and it feels like they are shareholders in the show. Mm. And it's this kind of like two-way relationship with the fans is very unique to Lucifer and something that I don't think will probably ever happen again on anything else I do. It's just the way that it happened and the involvement that they had in the show continuing and the format it is in now is huge.
Well, just out of interest, what was Newsnight's angle on it? Was it about the mobilization of social media, like fans, or was it genuinely like Emily Maitlis going, listen, I'm a huge Lucifer fan, so can
well,
I help?
That's the thing. I was like, there was two things. There was one was that one of the sort of main editors and researchers at Newsnight, his daughter was a huge Lucifer fan and very upset about this cancellation. And that had gotten him interested in this. But then their angle was, you know, let's talk about how TV is changing. And let's talk about that thing, you know, what we were talking about with the ratings and how it doesn't seem as relevant anymore. And why these kind of like online fan campaigns happen and whether indeed they ever, you know, come to fruition. Because all the time through that process, I was always warned by the sensible people and my team just going, Tom, you do realize this, that it is highly unlikely that this will happen. Because I went through a period of time where I was like, should I be fronting this? Do I feel like a sort of sour grapes?
Right.
You know, actor who can't take it. And you know, I did feel like I was kind of putting my reputation on the line a little bit, but I really believed in it. And that was the thing. And I really continued to believe in it. And I don't know.
And so you genuinely think, because I mean, that's an interesting question, not to borrow my questions from BBC's Newsnight, but the idea that the fan outcry about it being cancelled, actually, do you think it did contribute to Netflix going, we've seen this, we want it?
Oh, for sure. Wow. Because the sheer numbers that they, because, you know, Netflix, like any of tech company these days, they work on algorithms. Mm. And they just, you know, they became hugely aware of the popularity of the show through that explosion on social media. And so it was almost like a surefire acquisition for them. I think the nice thing for Netflix is that it's been, you know, a surprise to them as well, how it's just continued and snowballed and it's become, like, it's like their biggest show now. It's their most watched show in the world on Netflix. And that to me kind of blows my mind, but it's also, you know, it's again vindicating. It's like, wow, you gave us a chance and we sort of repaid you. And look at it. Look at us now.
And I've heard this, and you're certainly the person to ask, working with Netflix, having worked under the Fox banner, but I've heard that they leave filmmakers and TV makers alone a lot more. It's just like, this is your thing. Whereas a network is like, what are you doing? We want to see that. No, don't do that. Like, literally getting involved in the creative process. Netflix seem to stand back and go, we trust you, which they, like what should happen?
I think the bigger difference is that the Netflix due diligence process and streamers' due diligence process before they pick something up is different. So these days, rather than doing the pilot system where they do one thing and see how it goes and see how people respond to it, they want to pick up like a straight to series order these days. So they want to pick up something that's like 10 episodes or whatever. So they need a lot more detail up front about what it is. And so you have that process that you're talking about, where there's the micromanagement and everyone sort of justifying their jobs, giving notes for notes' sake, and all of those things. That all happens. That all happens at the beginning of it now. And if you can get through that process, yes, you know they really are kind of with Lucifer as well, because we'd already sort of established what the show is. They were just like, just do your thing. And like the freedom that we experienced under that was so palpably different to what we've been, you know, up against before.
It's the fan base for it. Not everyone loves the show, though. I do remember there was that petition, wasn't there, like Moms for America or something.
I'm one million mums, I think they were called.
There's
six of them.
Yeah, there's probably just one of them. Always reminds me of Maud Flanders. Won't somebody think of the children? It's because you made Lucifer too nice, didn't you, Tom?
It was a show about the devil. I mean, here's the thing. They complained and petitioned before they'd even seen the show, which I loved, because there was two things at play there. One is that I can say, well, that says more about them than it does about our show. And everyone's like, yeah, Tom, that's right. And then the other one is that, I love this. This was my trump card. I was like, do you understand where I'm from? Like, my dad is a Baptist pastor. My uncle is head of theology at Regent's Park College in Oxford. And my sister is a pastor. And they love it. They ain't got a problem with it at all. So what's your problem?
I forgot. Yeah, I remember reading this. You come from a religious family and you're playing the devil and they're fine with it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think, and I have to say, the most satisfying things, you know, the messages that I get from fans are from people of faith, which I get a lot of, you know, saying, I'm X, Y, or Z, and I believe this, but I get so much from your show because of this. And there are messages to be found within the show about good things, like and we always say this, for a show about the devil, it's incredible how much kindness it's promoted amongst people, amongst its fan base and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I don't think I've actually said this, but weirdly, you mentioned it already. I think I binged like most of it inside of like 2 weeks in lockdown. Cause I was like, it's great. It's one of those shows. I don't mind saying it, crack open a bottle of red, bang Lucifer on, poof, just like you can do like six episodes in a sitting. It's fantastic. It's really good. And you're fantastic in it as well. I think it's a great role. It's really fun to play. And I, you know, having just now sort of started the Lucifer process in the last year, I'm sorry to see it going, but I am pleased that we have a season six, because there was talk of season five being the last one, wasn't there? That's what everyone thought.
Well, that's what we thought. I mean, we were told, this is your fifth and final season by Netflix. And so we set out to make it the final season. And like literally as we were coming towards the sort of the final three episodes of shooting the final three episodes, and we'd broken what the finale was going to be, we'd thought long and hard about what the end of the show was going to be. there was another call from Netflix saying, hey, do you guys... it's like they found a shoebox full of more numbers of, oh, these people are watching as well. So basically very, very late in the day, they came and asked us about doing season six. And, you know, it was obviously lovely to be asked that. It was a little bit like, well, what are we going to do? Because we've written it. But thankfully, our showrunners and writers team are incredible. And they found a way to kind of, because we did want to preserve the end of the show that we'd come up with. Mm. And we managed to do that. And then they found this kind of great sort of story to tell that sort of helps us get to that point in a different way. So yeah. It was a curveball, but like all good Americans, they knocked it out of the park. Look at that little baseball analogy. I've never done that before.
Love a baseball analogy. Yeah, love it. Have you ever watched a baseball game in person?
I have. I went to go and see the New York Mets a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I'm a Yankees fan. I went to Yankee Stadium when I was in New York. And so by default, I'm a Yankees fan. Although I've been told by numerous Americans when I go, yeah, I'm a Yankees fan. They're like, that is like someone living, you know, in New Zealand going, I'm a Manchester United fan. It's the team that people abroad just go, Yankees.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the Mets are the Manchester City of the piece, but they just haven't had a big investor come and buy them. They haven't had like half of the Middle East come and buy them yet. But yes, I do like American sport, but I really, I have to tell you, I really, really miss football. I really miss, oh my God, I miss the Premier League and I miss Match of the Day. I really miss that.
You see, I always feel weird saying I'm not a football fan when I'm talking to a football fan, but I don't really, like American sports, I just love how long they go on for and that you don't really have to pay attention. I love the whole stop start thing. I like a burst of action and then you sort of eat a corn dog and have a beer nothing happens.
You'll appreciate this. I went to the Super Bowl about 3 years ago. Amazing, down in Houston in this amazing stadium, and it was a massive game. It was the Patriots against the Atlanta, and anyone who knows anything about football, that was a really iconic game because the comeback at the end was incredible. Mm-hmm. But about 2 minutes into the game, in this amazing stadium, tickets on the halfway line, guests of Fox, because they were hosting it that year, and my wife turns to me with a really disappointed face and goes, do we not get to see the commercials? My wife is American, but the big thing about the Super Bowl out here is the commercials when you watch on TV. It's like
the
whole
movie trailers.
Thing.
Yeah, that's what you wait for the big...
No, we're actually at the game. No, we don't get to watch the commercials.
Do you know what? I had a similar experience when I went to WrestleMania 25 in Houston, Texas. I was covering it for a radio station, XFM, back in the day. And they invited me out there. And the wrestling started, and I was like, well, where's the commentary? I don't know what the hell is going on. Like, it's a very strange experience just watching two men fight without someone going, oh, and the history between these two, the Undertaker has got some serious beef with this guy. And you're like, it sort of spoiled it a little bit. I need the story, like the narrative to go along with it.
It reminds me of when I was a kid and I watched the Dad's Army movie and I was like, where's the laughter? Where's the laughter track? I don't know where to laugh.
So Lucifer has stepped outside, Lucifer, as in the character. He was in, the Arrowverse Crisis on Infinite Earths, I think it was called. How was that? How was it cameoing in that?
I mean, that was hilarious. That was like I was doing some charity thing because I did a scene at Warner Brothers Studios in the morning in L.A., then stayed in my hair and makeup, went straight to LAX airport, got on a flight to Vancouver, 2 hours, and then got off the flight, went straight to set and did a little bit of a night shoot there. But it was
You were dressed as Lucifer on the flight to Vancouver.
I had my Lucifer hairdo and my like makeup on and everything, and I was just,
quite
a thing. It took like an hour every morning to blow my hair out and get it into that quiff. It was ridiculous.
That's the thing about Tom. He won't come out of character. When he's Lucifer, he will get on a plane and he will not break character.
Oh dear. But it was a lot of fun. Also, it was an opportunity to go back to Vancouver, which is where we used to film. We filmed the first two seasons of Lucifer, and I got some great mates up there. So that was the nice side of it for me as well. But it was fun. I got a lot of fan reaction from doing the crossover. Those worlds are quite sort of loved by people, aren't they? The DC worlds.
Oh yes, yeah, yeah. You do not want to say anything bad about Zack Snyder's Justice League. Let me tell you
No.
So, there is going to be a Flash movie coming out, which is dealing with like various different universes. We've got the Batman, Ben Affleck's Batman is going to be in it. Michael Keaton's Batman. Has Andy Muschietti, the director, has he called you yet? Is Lucifer going to be in it?
I think my phone hasn't been working, to be honest, because I've not heard a thing. No, I've not heard anything about that at all. But, you know, fingers crossed.
Would you like to, though? I mean, I guess that's the better
question. Of course. I mean, all of those big movie, you know, the big comic book movies, of course. I think any actor asked that question would probably say, yeah, I'd love to be part of that. But we shall see. We shall see. Because they're using a different actor playing Flash than they are from the TV show, aren't they?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, although I think there is talk of the TV's Flash being in it. But yeah, it's I just thought, you know, I'm a big Lucifer fan. I love the character. And I mean,
he's part of the Vertigo comics and like and under the DC umbrella and stuff. So I don't know. Like the people have asked me about, are you going to do any more in the future? And I, honestly, in this format as a TV show, probably not. But a Lucifer movie in the future, yeah, maybe we could talk about doing that. But I'm ready to hang up the horns at the moment and try something else.
I mean, in terms of hanging up the horns, I imagine. Well, actually, I don't imagine, because I think you said it in an interview. You said that the ending is it's a bittersweet ending. I think is the phrase you use. What are you hoping fans take from this final series? What would make you happy in terms of what you left them with at the end?
A feeling of satisfaction for sure, without kind of like. Being covered in vomit from a sickly sweet ending.
Okay, good.
Basically,
so you're hoping that people aren't covered in vomit is the headline.
Yeah, I hope that people end, you know, watching Lucifer not covered in vomit. I mean, it's quite a simple ask.
did you have a nice rap party though? Were you able to have a rap party when you actually finished?
We haven't had one. I mean, that's the saddest. Like we shot the final season of Lucifer during COVID, which was, you know, if anyone's had to work under those conditions knows it's, you know, you can't, it's not, you do everything in your power to not be around people as much as possible and cross-pollinate breath and things like that. So yeah. A wrap party was not what we did, but I did on the last day, I got a load of those like individual champagne bottles and brought them down to set so everyone could have their own champagne with their own straw under their mask. And just sort of say goodbye to each other and air hug each other. But it did feel very inappropriate compared to that, like the feeling that we had an amazing feeling backstage on Lucifer, like with our cast and our crew, and just it was a great place to come and work. So I'm hoping that we can still in the future sort of have that wrap party at some point and be able to celebrate properly. But
you need a wrap party. You need that. I mean, obviously.
I know.
It's a big thing, isn't it? Wrap parties at the end of a production. Okay, so you didn't have a wrap party, or you haven't had one yet. More importantly, did they let you keep the car?
No.
What?
They did not let me keep... I know! That, people say, what did you take from the set? And I always say, I wish I could have taken the car, but they wouldn't let me.
Honestly, it's such a beautiful car. What is it? It's a 90... I'm not a car person. I looked it up. It's a 1962 Corvette?
Something like that. 62 or 63. And it's also... I mean, it's incredibly beautiful, but it is like, it's like a workout driving it. Like there's no power steering. There's no, like the clutch is like, literally it's like you have to do, it's like doing seated like leg raises and stuff. It's crazy. but very, very satisfying. Once you get it going in a straight line, it's like, yes, America.
Yeah. That opening scene where I guess that was on Hollywood Boulevard where you're driving down in the very first episode. I remember watching that. Cause I like I said, I only watched it in the last year and I was going, oh, that's cool.
A little tease for you. That's how we open season 6 with a callback to that scene.
Ooh, great stuff. All right,
there we go.
Little bit of a teaser, a little bit of an appetite whetter there. Tom, I wish you all the best of luck with season 6. Not that you need it. As you said, everyone is chomping at the bit to see it. But congratulations on the show, on your 6-season run. It's a great show. And I've tried to stay away from spoilers, even though it's like 6 seasons in, you know, because I wanted to talk to you about the end of season 5, because obviously it is interesting. I watched it. Before I realized that there was a season 6, I think, because I was watching it thinking, is this the end? And it does feel kind of open-ended. So would that have been the end of season five? Again, without getting any, giving any spoilers away, would that have been the end of season five had you not known you were getting a season six?
No, it would have gone on a little bit longer. It would have gone on a bit longer. That would have been, I guess, the, if you break a script down, that would have been the end of act five, and there would have been one more act. But that's what we've been able to do with season six. That sort of prologue, you know, is or epilogue, I should say, is kind of like, is what season six is. It's kind of like taking that moment of like, and they all lived happily ever after, but then what actually happened? So that's kind of what season six is, but yeah.
Lovely stuff. Hitting Netflix on September the 10th. I look forward to seeing it. Enjoy New York, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
You too, Alex. Thanks so much.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, Alex Zane here. Thank you for choosing to listen to Just the Facts. And while you can still enjoy these episodes forever, you might want to check out our brand new show, A Trip to the Movies, where each week a different famous film fan curates their perfect night out at the cinema, picking what snacks they'd eat, where they'd sit, who they'd go with, and of course, what movies they'd screen. If you love cinema as much as we do, search A Trip to the Movies with Alex Zane or head to our socials at Trip to Movies Pod. That's at Trip to Movies Pod to find out more.